Blog Talk Radio.
Well, shalom, everyone. This is August Pizzotto with Today in Bible Prophecy Ministries. You want to welcome you to our show as we look at current world events in light of biblical prophecy and the soon return of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Holy, holy.
Well, folks, I want to welcome you to the show today. This is August Pizzotto coming to you live from Lincoln, Rhode Island. And we have been home for a little while now since we got back from our 2.5-month road tour covering the Midwest states as well as the southern states. And, of course, we are back in the New England area, and it's beginning to get kind of chilly out there right now. It seems like fall is turning just a little bit colder, and but that's how it is here in the New England area. But next Tuesday, my wife and I will be leaving for Belize. We'll be flying out of the country and going down to the tropics of Belize. I have never been to Belize before. It will be a new experience for the both of us, and I will be teaching at a couple of churches out there in Belize to Spanish and English-speaking people out there, and teaching them pretty much Bible Prophecy 101. And so we are looking forward to going out there, looking forward to meeting the missionaries out there who put this whole thing together. And we will be there for about 10 days or so, coming back on October the 29th. And so we are really looking forward to seeing what's going to go on over there, looking forward to seeing how the Lord's going to move over there. And so we are pretty excited about that. But we're glad that you tuned in to the program today. And again, folks, many of you have been watching the news and staying close to the events going on out there in Israel. And of course, you know, we're talking about the Palestinian Day of Rage. And there's just been a series of terrorist attacks going on out there in Israel. And folks, we know that the leadership of the Palestinian Authority are really not doing much at all. And they're pretty much encouraging attacks on Jewish people, attacks on Jewish settlements. There's been a series of stabbings going on around the Jerusalem area in Hebron. And it's, you know, they're falling short of calling it an intifada. And but that's where it seems to be going right now, possibly a Palestinian intifada or a third uprising. And folks, you know, Christian tourism is still going strong out there, despite these attacks that have been in isolated areas. But this is where we need to be standing behind the Jewish people and supporting the Jewish people. Even though these Palestinians are carrying out these terrorist attacks, yet once again, folks, and it's just the same old status quo, it just keeps going on and on and on and on. The world blames Israel. The BBC, which has to be one of the most anti-Semitic media organizations out there today, continues to blame the Jewish people. I was watching Ron Dermer, who is the ambassador of Israel to the United States, and he was on CNN. I could not believe the interview that was taking place there, where the interviewer was pretty much trying to turn this whole situation against the Israelis. Now, once they mention anything about the Palestinian terrorists going on a stabbing spree, using their cars to run people over at bus stops and train stops, I mean, it just goes to show you the mentality of this world today, that they're willing to look the other way no matter what the Palestinians do. They can never do wrong. They can blow half the world up, and the world will still be sympathetic toward them. I mean, what in the world is wrong with this picture? But, folks, it's getting pretty bad out there right now. And, you know, just looking at a series of news events, I'm getting updates from the Jerusalem Post, the Times of Israel, and, of course, three Palestinians attempt stabbings in Hebron and in Jerusalem. Of course, they were eliminated by the Israeli Defense Force. Teenage girls tried to stab a policewoman. And, folks, this was right near the cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron. We were there this past March in Hebron at the tomb of the Patriarchs. And all kinds of stuff is happening over there right now. Two other teens, Palestinian teens, were attacking at Kiryat Arba. And, of course, the Gaza, in Gaza, they're protesting over there as well. And, you know, Obama is backing Israel's right to protect itself. But it's always coming with a series of buts. Israel has the right to defend itself, but. Yeah, Israel should protect their citizens, but. Folks, there are no buts there. They have every right to protect their citizens. And now, of course, the Palestinian leadership, you know, they're granted all of these interviews where they're grabbing sympathetic ears from the liberal media that's not condemning them for their people carrying out attacks against the Jewish people. But they do have a sympathetic ear out there. Of course, the U.S. Ambassador Ron Dermer says that the Israeli actions are not excessive. Listen, if Israel wanted to get excessive, they could wipe all of them out right now with just one, you know, snap of the finger. And they know that, but Israel is not doing that because if they did that, they will be condemned by the entire world. Yet nobody is condemning these Palestinians and their stabbing sprees going on in Jerusalem and nearby areas. Israel rejects any international intervention on the Temple Mount. Now, there have been some countries that are asking Israel that they're willing to send their troops there to the Temple Mount. Now, this was at a Security Council meeting where the United Nations chief representative says that both sides are to blame for violence. Now, let me get this straight. Both sides are to blame for the violence, okay? It's not Jews that are running around stabbing Arabs. It's Arabs that are running around stabbing Jews. But yet, both sides are to blame for the violence. What do they expect the Israelis to do? Sit down and die? I mean, how do you expect Israel to respond? If we had this stuff going on in the United States of America, how do you think our forces are going to respond? Sit back and die? I don't think so. No one's going to blame America for defending itself. No one's going to blame France for defending itself. No one's going to blame China for defending themselves or any other nation, sovereign nation, for defending itself. But yet, Israel is defending itself, and they're saying that both sides are to blame without picking out the sole aggressor in this entire thing, and that are these people that call themselves the Palestinians. And yet, the criticism is on Israel. Israel's heavy-handed actions. What in the world do they expect Israel to do? Now, the United Nations envoy, Dannon, said that the Palestinian leadership built an incubator for terror. It's exactly what they did. The Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, he is the one that is encouraging and in Sidon, these Arabs that carry out these waves of Palestinian terrorist attacks, all of the stabbing sprees, all the blame lies at his feet. But the world seems to look the other way on that. Of course, we know that next week, Benjamin Netanyahu and John Kerry, they'll be meeting in Berlin next week to discuss this ongoing situation there in Israel. And, of course, the United Nations chief condemns the Palestinian arson attack on Joseph's tomb. Now, let me get that straight. He's willing to condemn the Palestinians torturing Joseph's tomb, the traditional site of Joseph's tomb, but he has not condemned Palestinian stabbing attacks in Jerusalem. Folks, it's an oxymoron. It's a double standard with these people. It's just simply unbelievable. But now there is a new terror war going on out there. The Palestinians deny even best documented attacks on Jews. In several recent incidents, the facts, in some cases, corroborated by mobile phone footage, are simply being rejected by the world. Even though you have the Israelis putting this out there on YouTube, on the internet, everywhere, showing these terrorists carrying out these attacks, but yet the blame still lies at the feet of Israel. Even the United Nations workers, they're hailing these terrorist attacks on social media. The United Nations Relief Workers Agency, the UN watchdog, takes Palestinian Refugee Agency to task for alleged employees that's celebrating the stabbings. And these guys are calling for a third intifada against Israel. That's right, the UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Workers Agency, praising the stabbings and calling for a third intifada. If Israel wanted to, folks, Israel, with the snap of a finger, could wipe out all of these terrorists. But they're trying not to do that. I mean, they're killing the terrorists, and rightfully so. But if they wanted to, they can eliminate Hamas, they can eliminate Abbas, they can eliminate the entire terrorist structure. They can eliminate it in one day if they wanted to and put a stop to this nonsense once and for all. But folks, no matter what Israel does, and forgive me for using this type of terminology, but with Israel, it's damn if they do and damn if they don't. That's pretty much where it is right now. But folks, this is all playing in to what the Bible says will happen in terms of Bible prophecy. Many of you in the past have heard me talk about Esau and judgment on the Palestinians. In order for us to understand what's going to happen in the end, we need to go all the way back to the very beginning, to the very beginning of an ancient people whom we believe the Palestinians are descended from today. If you were to look at Genesis chapter number 36 and verse number 1, it's a genealogy. Genealogies are very important in the Bible. Genealogies give us much important information to describe a people, to describe a culture, to describe a geographical location. Genesis 36 is the genealogy of Esau and his descendants. In verse number 1, it says this: "Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom." Now we know that Esau was the brother of Jacob. We know based on Genesis chapter 32 and verse 28 Jacob's name was changed from Jacob the Deceiver to Israel, which means I will fight for you. Now, Jacob, of course, was a grandson of Abraham. Abraham was called the first Hebrew. That's Genesis 14. His grandson, Jacob, was called Israel, Genesis chapter 32 and verse number 28. And Abraham's great-grandson, Judah, was called the first Jew, 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse number 6. We know that Esau and Jacob were born in Genesis chapter number 25 and verse number 23. Okay? Two nations in one womb. One nation will be known as the Edomites. That would be Esau. And the second nation would be Jacob, or in Hebrew, Yaakov. Jacob, of course, would be Israel. When these two brothers went their separate ways, they departed their own ways, we see that Esau settled in the lower third of modern-day Jordan. Genesis 36 says, now these are the generations of Esau who was Edom. When you drop down to verse number 8, it says, thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Verse 5 says that the sons of Esau, which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. The land of Canaan would be today the land of Israel. But Esau and his people did not dwell in Canaan. They went over the border of southern Canaan, the land of Israel. They went over the border and settled south in the lower third of what is today modern Jordan. So it says Mount Seir. Now, Mount Seir was their capital. Now, people always ask me, who was Seir? S-E-I-R. Seir was a Horite, and his people, Seir and the Horites, their people intermarried with the Edomites. Now, we find this in Genesis chapter 36, verses 20 and 21. It says, these are the sons of Seir the Horite, who inhabited the land. And then if you look up verse 21, it says, the dukes of the land of Edom. The dukes, it will be the chiefs of the land of Edom. So Seir was a Horite whose people intermarried with the Edomites. And so they named their capital after him, Seir. Verse 9 says this, and these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. What we're going to do on this program today is we're going to trace the Edomite family tree all the way to the people today who call themselves the Palestinians. Now, if you look in verse number 12, Esau had a grandson, okay? He's an Edomite, but he's called by another name. Verse 12 says, and Timnah was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bare to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the sons of Adah, Esau's wife. So Amalek was a grandson of Esau. Amalek was an Edomite, but he founded his own nation and his own people, and they called these people the Amalekites. So Amalek, who's the grandson of Esau, is an Edomite. Amalek was the father of the Amalekites. The Amalekites were a vicious people. They were very cruel, just very, very vicious individuals who killed anybody who came along their route. They would rob merchants. They would kill the merchants. They would take the plunder, take it back to their land. When the Israelites left Egypt on their way to the Promised Land, they came across Amalek and his people, the Amalekites. And we find the story in Exodus chapter number 17. You will notice in Exodus chapter number 17, And looking at verse number 8, we see Israel immediately at war with Amalek, Esau's grandson. And it says in verse 8, then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. So now Israel is at war with Amalek and the Amalekites because they refused Israel passage through their land. Verse 13 says this, and Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. God said this, I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under. Verse 15 says this, and Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, which is the Lord my banner. And verse 16 says, for he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So folks, this war simply does not stop here. This war will go on from generation to generation to generation to generation. To the people today who are trying to kill the Jews and take their land. That's exactly what we see going on in the land of Israel right now with these Palestinians and these stabbings going on around the country. But I want you to go to 1 Samuel 15, and I want to introduce to you a descendant of Amalek. Go with me to 1 Samuel chapter number 15, and I want to show you out of 1 Samuel chapter number 15. Saul became Israel's first king. God told Saul to do one simple task. Saul in the past was a very disobedient king. God told him to do one thing, he went and did the total opposite. God said, I'm going to give you one more chance, Saul, to carry out a simple task. Saul was asked to destroy Amalek and the Amalekites. Verse 1 of 1 Samuel 15 says, Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now, we're going back to what I just read in Exodus chapter 17, Israel's war with Amalek. God doesn't forget nothing. God remembers everything. He sees everything. Verse 4. And so he said, I'm sorry, in verse 3, he says, now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. Spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass or donkey. God said, wipe them all up, because if you leave the people around, they will come back to bite you. They will be a thorn in your flesh. That's exactly what we see happening right now, folks. So we drop down to verse number 6. Once again, Saul didn't listen. He was very disobedient. And Saul said to the Kenites, go depart. Get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed. We know based on Numbers chapter 24 and verse number 21, Judges 1:16, and other passages, the Kenites showed kindness to the Israelites. So they were spared this oncoming slaughter. And this is what happens when you bless the Jewish people. Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless thee, curse those who curse thee. Verse 7, and Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until thou comest to Shur. That would be in the area today of Saudi Arabia, based on Genesis 25 and verse number 18. From Havilah that goes to Shur. Now, here it is right here. Here's where his disobedience came in. Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. He killed everybody else, but God never told him to leave Agag alive. God said, wipe them all out. Kill everybody. But instead, what did he do? He spared the animals, and he spared Agag. But yet it says Agag was an Amalekite. Agag, the Amalekite, which means he was a descendant of who? Amalek. He was a descendant of Amalek, the father of the Amalekites. Amalek was the grandson of who? Esau, Genesis 36. So we see the Edomite family tree being formed here. If you drop down to verse 32, Samuel looks at Saul and says something like this. Saul, why in the world can't you do something right? You can't send a boy to do a man's job. So verse 32, it says this. Then said Samuel, bring ye hither to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came unto him delicately. And Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. And Samuel said, and thy sword hath made woman childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. I don't know if this actually happened, but he probably took the sword out of Saul's hand. And he says, this is how you do it, Saul. And he chopped up Agag into little bite-sized pieces. So we have Esau, the father of the Edomites. We have Amalek, his grandson, the father of the Amalekites. We have Agag, the Amalekite. But I want you to go with me to the book, the book of Esther, if you will, please. The book of Esther. Let's go to the book of Esther. I want to show you something here as we continue to look at this Edomite family tree. I want you to look with me in Esther chapter number 3. Esther chapter number 3. I want you to look at this devious individual right here. This devious individual wanted to wipe out every single Jew. Notice with me, if you will, Esther chapter 3 in verse number 1. After these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. Now, did you get that? Did you see it, folks? It said, Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite. That means he's a descendant of who? Agag in 1 Samuel 15, whom Samuel hewed in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. Haman, the Agagite, was a descendant of Agag, 1 Samuel 15. Agag was the Amalekite, who was a descendant of who? Amalek, Exodus 17. Amalek is the grandson of Esau, Genesis 36, 12. Esau is the father of the Edomites, Genesis 36, 1. Genesis 36, 8 and 9. Haman was being used by Satan to try to wipe out the Jews. Satan's using Haman. He used Agag. He used Amalek. He used Esau and his descendants. If you drop down to verse number 10, it says, and the king took his ring from the hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. And then, of course, if you drop down to verse number 13, it says, and the letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. Adar corresponds to the month of March, where the Jews celebrate Purim, P-U-R-I-M. Pur simply means to cast a lot. If you look at verse number 7, it says this, Esther 3:7. In the first month, that is the month Nisan, that would be April. Nisan is April, late April, early March. In the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is the lot, before payments. In other words, they were capping these per or lots to see which area or which community they would cast lots to kill the Jews. If you go to chapter number 9, the Feast of Purim is instituted. You know, people say whenever something bad happens to the Jews, they make a holiday out of it. Well, that's one of these holidays right here, Purim, verse 21, that's the chapter 9. It says this, establish this among them, that they should keep the 14th day of the month Adar, that's March, and the 15th day of the same yearly. Verse 24, why? Because Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had devised against the Jews to destroy them and cast pur, P-U-R, that's lot. That is the lot to consume them and to destroy them. Here's where the holiday comes in, verse 26. Wherefore they call these days Purim, P-U-R-I-M. Whenever you add the letters I-M, the end of a word in Hebrew, it pluralizes that word. Pur, P-U-R, lot, L-O-T. Purim, lots. We see the Feast of Purim in Esther chapter 9, verse 28, verse 29, verse 31, and verse 32. Verse 32 says, and the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, as it was written in the book. Here's what's interesting. Haman had a great, 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 great grandson. His name, Herod, Herod the Great, was an Edomite. His father, Antipater, was king of Edom at one time. Herod was made king of the Jews by the Roman Empire. Goes back to Jerusalem. Hears word that there is a king of the Jews born in Bethlehem of Judea. Sends the wise men over there. The wise men come. They worship the king of the Jews. Instead of going back to Herod, they go back to the east. Probably the stargazers there in Persia. Herod is enraged. And Herod orders the murder of all the Jewish babies from 2 years old and younger, hoping to strike the king of the Jews. He failed because God is always one step ahead of Satan and Satan's enraged fury to wipe out the Jewish people in order to thwart the promises of Genesis 3:15 from coming to pass. Of course, Herod dies and the Holy Family comes back into the land of Israel. That's Matthew chapter 2, verses 20 and 21. It doesn't say the land of Palestine. It says the land of Israel. Let's jump back into modern times. It's December 11th, 1917. General Allenby of the British forces, they defeat the Ottoman Empire in the Jezreel Valley. He then goes to Jerusalem and does a mopping up exercise. The Ottoman Empire, who was in charge of the Middle East and the land of Israel for 400 years, is now out of power. There's a surrender ceremony taking place in the city of Jerusalem near the Jaffa Gate. General Allenby leaves the Jezreel Valley, goes 97 miles south from the Jezreel Valley to the city of Jerusalem. He's going on his horse, his white horse, actually. He's about to go into the Jaffa Gate, but instead of going through the gate on his horse, he leans the reins back on his horse, dismounts from his horse. One of his people said, General Allenby, aren't you going into the surrender ceremony? He said, I am. He said, why did you dismount off your horse? He says, I'm not going through the Jaffa Gate on my horse. He says, because one day my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ is going to ride a white horse through the city. He says, today I'm walking through the Jaffa Gate. He walks into the Jaffa Gate, receives surrender from the Turkish Empire. But now he needs to name a mayor to run the city of Jerusalem. He sees a man by the name of Hussein al-Husseini. He says, Mr. Husseini, you are now mayor of Jerusalem. That's a good-looking young man with you. What's his name? Aman al-Husseini. Aman al-Husseini was later on named the Grand Mufti of the entire Middle East, the most powerful Islamic cleric in the Middle East. He gets a communique from Adolf Hitler in Berlin, invites Aman al-Husseini to go on a radio station to discuss how they could destroy the Jews. But here's what I didn't tell you folks. When the Romans destroyed the temple in 70 AD, the Jews were scattered to the four corners of the earth. The Edomites, who escaped Edom when the Nabataeans invaded Edom and killed many Edomites, those Edomites who survived went over the border into southern Judea. Their names changed from the Edomites to the Idumeans. Idumean is Greek for southern Judea. They dwell in southern Judea. The Romans destroyed the temple in 70 AD. Jews were scattered to the four corners of the earth. The Idumeans, who were helping their brothers, the Jews, were also scattered by the Romans. They went north to a place in the Balkans called Bosnia. Prior to the war of 1948, between Israel and the Arab world, Adolf Hitler invites Aman al-Husseini to come to Berlin, Germany. He's teaching them how to wipe the Jews out. Goes on a powerful radio station that Hitler set up in Monaco to talk about how to wipe out the Jews. Adolf Hitler looked at Aman al-Husseini and said this, before you go back to the Middle East, I want you to go to Bosnia and gather a massive Arab army and bring them back to the Middle East. That's exactly what he does. And it is the year 1948. It's the War of Independence. If you go to the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem today, Yad Vashem, you will see a picture of Aman al-Husseini inspecting the Arab elite commando unit right there in Bosnia. Who are those people? Those were the Idumeans who settled there in Bosnia for all those centuries. Now, folks, I hope you've been paying attention. You have Esau, the father of the Edomites, Genesis 36, 1, 8, and 9. His grandson, Amalek, Genesis 36, 12. And then his descendant, Agag, the Amalekite, 1 Samuel 15. And then his descendant, Haman, the Agagite, 1 Samuel chapter number 3. And then his great-great-great-great-grandson, Herod, the Edomite, who called himself the King of the Jews. He's mentioned in the New Testament. And then you have Aman al-Husseini, Husseini al-Husseini. And by the way, Aman al-Husseini had a nephew. His name, Yasser Arafat. The Edomite family tree. Who are the Palestinians of today? They are descendants of the Edomites. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to kill every single Jew. If you look at Ezekiel chapter number 35, it talks about future retribution to the Palestinian people of today. Ezekiel 35 is absolutely an amazing prophecy against the descendants of the Edomites today, the Palestinians. The prophecy against Mount Seir. In Ezekiel 35, in verse number 5, it says this, because thou hast had a perpetual hatred and hast shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. These people have had a perpetual hatred against the Jews, shedding their blood over the centuries, just like they're doing right now with all these stabbings going on in Israel. Verse 10, because thou hast said, these two nations and these two countries shall be mine, and we will possess it, whereas the Lord was there. We always hear about these two-state solutions, say, a state of Israel and a state of Palestine. The Palestinians don't want a two-state solution. They want a one-state solution. They want these two countries to be theirs. They want the land of Israel, and they want to rename that land of Israel Palestine, because these two nations and these two countries shall be mine. Verse 12, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord, and that I have heard all thy blasphemies, which thou hast spoken against the mountains of Israel, saying, verily, desolate, they are given us to consume. Thus with your mouth, you have boasted against me, and have multiplied your words against me. I have heard them. Verse 15, as thou didst rejoice at the inheritance of the house of Israel, because it was desolate, so will I do unto thee. Thou shalt be desolate, O Mount Seir, and all Idumea, is that word again? That's Greek for southern Judea, even all of it. And they shall know that I am the Lord. If you read Jeremiah chapter 49, verse number 10, it says, one day the Palestinians will be like Sodom and Gomorrah. Also, Obadiah, the smallest book in the Bible, Obadiah talks about the destruction in the future against the Jewish people. God, 350 years in advance, told Obadiah of the Edomite destruction. Verses 1 through 14 is prophecy already fulfilled. But when we read from verses 15 onward, it's future prophecy that is yet to be fulfilled. And yet we see in Obadiah 17, but upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions. And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau a stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them. And there shall not be any remain of the house of Esau, for the Lord hath spoken it. And we see the same thing, folks, in Malachi chapter number 1. Malachi chapter number 1. Malachi is very clear about the future destruction of these people. You know, the Palestinians say they want their own borders. They want their own state. But notice what God said about this in Malachi chapter 1, verse 4. Whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. And they shall call them the border of wickedness. And the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. The modern-day Edomites are the Palestinians of today who are looking to take a land, to kill a people, and say to us, but God says, I have indignation against you forever, and you will be destroyed. So, folks, what we see going on over there in Israel is indeed setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled and setting up the stage for the ultimate destruction at the hands of God of the people today, the Palestinian people, the descendants of the Edomites. What is that telling us, folks? Bible prophecy is indeed on course to being fulfilled. Well, folks, Tuesday we'll be leaving for Belize. We'll be flying to that tropic country, and we'll be there. So I hope you pray for us and for travel mercies, and we will see you there in a couple of weeks as we do our radio station from that country. Until next week, this is August Rosado saying keep looking up. Jesus is coming soon.